Boa noite! Virtuose da guitarra, menino prodígio, nascido em Kansas City, no Missouri, foi no Brasil que ele veio encontrar alguns de seus melhores irmãos artísticos. Na música brasileira, ele achou o caminho para seguir adiante na estrada do jazz americano que tinha lhe formado. Mestre reconhecido do improviso, ele agora acaba de lançar um álbum em que só escreveu as partituras para violonistas clássicos executarem. É o resultado de uma vida dedicada à produção de beleza. Um dos maiores músicos do mundo, hoje ele transcende instrumentos, notas e partituras, enxerga, escuta e faz arte nos gestos mais ordinários do dia a dia. Pensa a arte como uma forma, a mais ampla e generosa forma de tocar o outro. Já foi parceiro de grandes nomes do pop, do rock, da bossa nova, da MPB, da música clássica, música de vanguarda. Esse negócio de rótulo, de cercadinho, disso sim, isso não, não é com ele. O que explica por que nenhum outro músico tenha ganhado prêmios Grammy em tantas categorias diferentes. 10 categorias diferentes. Ele adora o Brasil, já morou no Rio e ainda tem muitos amigos por aqui. Nossa conversa hoje é com Pat Metheny. Hi, Pat.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's a joy to have you in Brazil, even if it's in a virtual way. Last year, you were about to come to Brazil when we were hit by coronavirus. Where were you when you got caught by the pandemic?
Yeah, it was very disappointing on so many levels. We had just played in Singapore, New Zealand, and Australia, flew from Australia to Argentina, and, you know, everything was kind of, you know, there were rumblings in the distance, but at that point, there were no cases in Argentina, none in Brazil, none in Chile, you know, all the places we were going to play. And it took like 3 days for all the equipment to come from New Zealand to Argentina. And during that 3 days is when, you know, the clarity of what was about to happen became, you know, apparent to everybody.
I'm having a great time listening to The Road to the Sun. It's a kind of unique in your career. It's a different, well, for many reasons. Can we read this album as a response to the pandemic somehow?
No, I can't really honestly say that because it was done before all of that happened. It is a unique record for me in the sense that while I have written lots of notes for lots of great musicians along the way, it has mostly been with the destination of improvising. You know, even if I had 40 pages of written material, eventually somebody was going to take that and do something with it. There is a weird satisfaction for me of having now two pieces that 100 years from now, people will be able to get the complete story on the page, yeah. You know, without having to have...
So because you've always been known as an accomplished improviser. So now, well, we don't have to take it that seriously, but we can say you're going from the ephemeris improvisation to the posterity of the score, there, written forever.
Yeah.
And there's another, I would call it ambivalence or ambiguity, because composing music this way, it's almost a solitary deed. You can do it indoors and immersed in the creation. But then, what happens when you share it with the audiences? If you're not sharing it, so how would you say social isolation is affecting your music?
Yeah, it is a very interesting question. I mean, the first aspect of socialization for me is who are you writing for? And what do they sound like? What are they like as people? Because I always write for the people, you know, that I'm around. And, you know, I know I'm known as a guitar player and everything, but actually my main job all these years has been band leader. For this record, these guys, their thing is not improvising, it's playing written notes. So, You know, that was the Pat Metheny group of that moment. These four amazing guitar players who have these incredible skills. So what can I do with that? How can I offer a platform for those guys to do their thing, filtered through, you know, all of my interests and so forth?
You know, you sounded very philosophical in the pre-interview to this program. So I'm going to quote something that you said. You said, as the years have gone by, my connection to playing music has changed in a good way. Even if I'm just taking out the trash, that's the same as playing for me. Music is sort of a symptom for me of a way to be, an incredible teacher for me. You can do everything with a high level of listening and awareness of what's going on around you as an improviser, because I'm improvising right now. Well, that's quite stimulating thought. Music and art taking out the trash. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think that musicians enjoy a certain exalted status, you know, of like, you know, whatever. But in fact, you know, everybody's doing kind of amazing things all day long, if you really think about it. I mean, you think about the guy who's going to come and fix your refrigerator, you know, if he's a good refrigerator guy, he's going to kind of know that he was going to somebody's house. So he had kind of a form, and was kind of maybe going to know what the model was. But, you know, basically he's improvising a way into that situation that can have many, many degrees of success or failure on many different levels. And that's not unlike what's happening in music. You know, I mean, I don't want to diminish the exceptional qualities of what music is within the realm of the fabric of this universe, because it is very unusual. You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it, but when the music is happening, you know it. So I'm not downplaying that, but I do think that for me, the idea of how to be a person has always been informed by what I've learned through music. And music has proven to be a really resilient, beautiful, robust, inspiring teacher.
But to quote another philosophical statement of your pre-interview, you noted that every culture, every language has the saying, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So can we then infer that music is in the ears or the heart of the listener?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing for me, as you probably, you know, or some people might know, my sense of music is pretty wide. I mean, it's, you know, it goes from the simplest to the most complex, from the noisiest to the quietest. And honestly, I mean, I could knock down a bunch of trash cans down a flight of stairs, and I could, you know, spend a couple of years working on what that was musically. You know, to me, that's like a viable melodic statement there. So, you know, yes, I think a lot of it is in the perception of it. However, one of those cliches that I really love is the one which is that is most personal becomes most universal. And that's something that I have noticed to be true across all of my favorite musicians. They all have a very strong point of view about something. And for me, that is also interesting because, you know, I kind of feel like general in a lot of ways. I mean, most things that become really popular, yeah, I can see why that's popular. You know, I'm surprised that a whole bunch of other stuff isn't more popular. But I don't feel like when I hear, you know, the newest hit on the radio, oh, man, that's just crap. No, it's like, I mean, I understand that that's hard to do, to get it to be that, you know. It's all hard. And to get something that's really great means that somebody somewhere loved that sound. They wanted to be sure that exactly that sound was just like that. And they probably spent four nights in a studio getting the sampled snare drum to be exactly EQ'd just like that and tried it 50 different ways. I mean, there's, you know, there's that to the guy knocking garbage cans down a flight of stairs and transcribing it. To me, it's all viable.
That's very generous and liberating as well for all. But listen, you mentioned the Tolstoy-like saying that if you want to get universal, you have to be personal. But to find the way to be personal and universal, you had to come to Brazil.
Well, you know, I mean, when my chronology, you know, I was born in 1954. So when I was like eight, that's when the Beatles came to the States, you know, even in my little town of Lee's Summit, Missouri, suddenly electric guitar was not just an instrument, it was a symbol of everything that was just about to happen. But mixed in with that were those, you know, nine Jobim tunes, you know, and Stan Getz and Astrud and Joao. And that, to me, I learned that at the same time I learned Charlie Parker tunes. So, you know, to me, it was all an integrated thing. And you know, the relationship between what you guys call, you know, MPB and jazz, and, you know, that level of harmonic activity is something that is a shared language. And for me, that was instantly attractive and, you know, an incredible sort of musical ambassadorship to the world from you guys. And then, you know, the people that continued that level of harmonic activity, like Yvonne Linz and Milton, certainly, you know, that may have been the last, you know, really popular music in the world.
How's your Portuguese doing these days?
Muito mal.
Can you speak it? Muito mal. Você fala com seus amigos brasileiros de vez em quando?
Na emergency, eu falo, okay. If somebody's dying, I could probably get an ambulance.
But you keep in touch with your Brazilian friends. For instance, do you talk once in a while to your former girlfriend, the glamorous Sonia Braga?
We do stay in touch. She's one of my favorite people that I have ever known in my entire life. Just one of really the best human beings ever. Just genuinely good-hearted, good person. So I love Sonia. I'll always love her, yeah.
Listen, some old friends of yours decided to pop up and say hello.
Falar de Pat Metheny para mim é uma honra. Em 1992, costumávamos ir à minha casa para tocar durante horas, totalmente free. Uma de suas vindas ao Rio, levei à casa de Tom Jobim para assistir a um ensaio nosso. E o apresentei ao maestro. Ele ficou maravilhado com a maneira como conduzíamos a música. Logo depois disso, me convidou para ir a Nova York gravar uma música no CD Secret Story, As If It Was The End. Are you waiting for you, Pat? Bye-bye.
Eu escuto a música do Pat Metheny desde sempre. Sou um grande admirador dele como compositor, como guitarrista, um virtuose um músico muito inspirado.
O interessante da coisa é que muita gente me perguntava quem é que influenciou quem? Eu ouvi tantas vezes as pessoas me perguntarem que um dia eu falei assim, sou mais velho, assim mesmo.
E eu tive muita influência dele, né? Na verdade, a música Depois dos Temporais, que eu fiz no começo dos anos 80, é inspirada numa música dele, que é o Are You Going With Me, do disco Off Ramp. Quem sabe um dia a gente se encontra e faz, né? Toca junto, grava junto, alguma coisa. Adoraria fazer isso. É um sonho meu até. E é isso. Pat Metheny, I love you, man. Take care.
Wow.
Okay? See you soon, if it's possible.
That is fantastic. Wow.
This was a seleção, the national Brazilian, the Brazilian squad.
That Paulinho is so Braga, nice.
Jacques Morellenbaum, Toninho Horta, Ivan Lins.
Wow.
Can we look forward to your collaboration with Ivan Lins?
You know, it's amazing that we've never done anything over all these years. I mean, he's a real hero for me. He's like one of the real chord guys, you know. Those are some good chords, great notes, great melodies, yeah.
Yeah, he was a young boy in the States. He was in Boston, lived in Boston from 2 to 5 years old, which is this first infancy that in somehow forms us, shapes what we'll become. So he has the Brazilian touch, but some kind of, it's easy for him to communicate with Americans and to the world in general.
You know, one thing I will say is I don't put nearly as much value on the last 5 to 3,000 years that most people do, because I see it as just kind of incidental, really, you know, compared to the previous 299,000 years that there have been modern humans. And we spend so much time, like, talking about, you know, really, you know, like when you're in an airplane and you look down, you're not saying, oh, that's Brazil, that's Argentina, oh, that's America, that's Canada. You know, I mean, this is just stuff, you know? I mean, what we all have in common, and this is one of the real benefits of playing music that has no lyrics, is that we can go all over the world. And, you know, yes, people come to see us, but we get to see them. And in the course of a year, I'm going to look at a whole bunch of Japanese people, a whole bunch of Argentinian people, a whole bunch of, you know, Finland people, a whole bunch of Russian, you know, I'm going to see everybody. And when we start playing, there's no border there. It's not like, oh, I can tell that's a Brazilian audience, or oh, I can tell that. I mean, you know, there's some of the superficial, like Italians are definitely louder than Japanese, that's for sure. But I mean, mostly what it happens inside the music is going to get a similar response everywhere. And it's an interesting thing. It's a very interesting benefit to playing this kind of music that's highly improvised, that has no lyrical, you know, meaning. Mm-hmm. You really, it's an interesting almost experiment in what humanity is.
Not lyrical apparent meaning. Something, there's a meaning there. And especially now, music, it's more and more necessary because people are enclustered. Argentinians don't talk to Argentinians. Brazilians don't talk to Brazilians. It's all polarized all over the world. And then comes music. And it talks to everybody. And it's so necessary, so dramatically needed at this time in our story.
I agree.
In our history. Was the girl from Ipanema your first Brazilian love?
What it was... I know there's a lot of guitar players out there, and everybody knows you can learn C and you can learn G, but at a certain point, you're going to have to learn F, where you have to bar down the first two frets with one finger, which for me at age 11 was really hard to do. And I found that if I just left the top string open, that becomes an F major 7, which is the first chord of Girl from Ipanema. And if I put my little finger on the G, that was the first melody note. So right after I learned the theme from Batman, I learned The Girl from Ipanema. Like probably within the first 24 hours, exactly.
Well, you have a guitar by you. Could you show us that?
You know, even to do that, I would have to warm up for 4 hours.
Okay.
When my daughter had her, you know, 8th birthday, they wanted me to play, you know, the chords for Happy Birthday. Uh-huh. And I said, sure, but I'm still going to warm up for 2 hours before the party. There's a fine line between talent and mental illness, you know, and I'm right. You
know. it's reverence for the art. It's more than respect. It's something religious.
It is, to tell you the truth.
It is.
I mean, the bandstand is church for me, and this is something I do have to communicate to every new musician. You know, because a lot of musicians, you know, they're on the bandstand and they're talking and they're kind of goofing around and stuff. And I'm like, no, you guys, this is serious. This is it. Everything that we do has been leading to that moment. And you should be in that moment in every way. So it's, yeah, it is church for me. So.
And back there, it began began sacred, and it is still sacred. We have another message for you from one of the greatest voices of humankind.
Hey, Pat, meu grande amigo, querido. Estou com saudade de você. A gente precisa se encontrar de novo. Sabe uma coisa que eu lembrei? Nos anos 80, 86, mais ou menos, a gente gravou Dido e Corte. Foi um lance de guitarra que você fez, que eu acho uma das coisas mais bonitas da minha vida. E assim, várias coisas, né? Depois fizemos também um disco chamado Ângelos, umas músicas que a gente gravou com vários amigos nossos. Foi lindíssimo, lindíssimo. Principalmente Novena, minha primeira música. O que eu quero falar é o seguinte. Vê se aparece. Vê se a gente se encontra. Um beijo enorme, querido irmão.
Wow, that is unbelievable. Yeah. Thank you. Wow. Yeah, I'm like, I didn't expect any of this. I mean, you know, of course, Milton is one of my main heroes in life, you know, and... you know, the fact that I kind of got to know him, did you do the recordings that he was talking about? And also I kind of played in his band a little bit, you know, which was fun.
We have photographic evidence of that, yeah. That you were practically a member of the Clube da Esquina, the Corners Club.
That record, that was one of the records for me that, you know, like, you know, people often ask, like, give me your 5-10 most important records. That's always in there for me. You know, that was a really unique period, certainly in Brazil, but in the world, people were, you know, it was after the Beatles, multi-track recording had just kind of become more available. People were really, you know, the lines had not been drawn quite as clearly between this kind of music and that kind of music. There was a lot of really interesting sonic and harmonic and melodic experimentation going on.
We found a news story from 1988 from the afternoon news, and then Milton, yourself, Ron Carter, Herbie Hancock, and Naná Vasconcelos on the stage. This was America. It was a show in America.
And also, notably, that's Mike Brecker playing saxophone, too. You know, one of the greatest tenor players ever. So, yeah, good band.
It looked like you were having lots of fun, all of you.
Yeah, we did. That was great. That was really fun experience, yeah.
What pop artist from the present days would you like to play with?
That's a really interesting question. You know, there are musicians that I think are really good musicians, and sometimes people are surprised to hear who I think they are. Taylor Swift is a really good musician. She writes those tunes. She can sit there and play them on the guitar. It sounds like the record, and she can really sing, and it's in tune. And she's, to me, it's like, yeah, that's somebody who's an actual musician. As opposed to, I won't name other names, but there are people, it's more about how they look and, you know, and all that. But Lady Gaga, she can really sing. She sings in tune. She's a great singer. And, you know, it feels good when she's singing, you know. And then, of course, Beyoncé is like the real deal, you know. I mean, that's like, you know, that's in its own category.
Listen, you come from a family of musicians, and you were sort of expected or programmed to be a horn player. So playing the guitar was kind of a mandatory transgression for you to develop your own musical identity.
Transgression is a good word. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, as I mentioned, I have three kids, and I understand a lot of stuff now that I didn't understand before. I think you don't understand until you have your own kids. But I realized that at age 12, me telling my parents I want to play guitar and my hero is Miles Davis and I'm only listening to John Coltrane for the next 6 months and that's what I'm going to do with my life is about like one of my kids coming to me and saying, Dad, I'm going to become a professional video game player. And I would say, no, you're not. You're not going to do that. That's crazy. And that was pretty much my parents' response, you know, and I see that as being very reasonable now in ways that I absolutely did not at the time. And you use the word transgression. The fact that they took it that way as in, you know, something not a good idea was really like throwing gasoline on the fire because that just made me want to do it even more. And I mean, basically from that age of 12 or so till, you know, well, now I just, you know, have been completely devoted to trying to understand music. And, you know, that was a puzzle for them to figure out. I think for my dad, once I started to do okay, he saw it as a job. He was like, oh, well, at least he's going to have a job. You know, I'm not sure the video game thing would work out like that. Maybe it would.
I don't know. I think we can expect a Matheny champion of video game play.
Maybe so.
Listen, let's imagine you will play in Rio de Janeiro after the worst of the pandemic has passed. How would you open the show? What would you say and play?
Well, what I intend is the band that was coming, where before this all happened, first of all, it's one of the best bands I've ever had. It may be the best band I've ever had. It's the band that's represented on the previous release to this last one called From This Place. And I put that band together to do something I had never done before, which is to go around and play a program that was built on older music. Because I'm like everybody else, I play mostly the new stuff with a couple of old ones. This was the whole thing was older tunes. And the program is really long, but it's a program that I think people that know my thing are gonna really enjoy. People who have never heard it, or you know, maybe heard my name or whatever, it's gonna be a really good starting place kind of program too, because it covers so much ground. But it's an incredible band, and we will be there. I don't know. I don't care when it is, what it's gonna take. We're coming. So
that's the way to go. Thank you so much, Pat. It was really a pleasure talking to you. Take care of yourself. And we're getting the stage ready here. So you come with so sad.
Thank you. And thank you for the extra surprise things today. Man, that was just fantastic. Thank you so much. What a treat.
Good. Thank you very much.
All right, man.
Ficou curioso para ver as imagens do programa? É só entrar na página do Conversa no Globoplay. Tá tudo lá. Até a próxima.